Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now, as usual on Wednesday mornings after Mayor Adams' Tuesday news conferences, our lead Eric Adams reporter Liz Kim joins us with excerpts and analysis and to take your calls. Subway safety, a right to shelter, a settlement on that with the Legal Aid Society regarding migrants and New Yorkers already here, very much in the news. That just happened a couple of days ago. The sexual assault lawsuit filed against the mayor for an alleged assault in the early 1990s. And this morning, there's a new survey out showing a lot of dissatisfaction among New Yorkers with the quality of life right now. Hi, Liz. Thanks for coming on, as always.
Good morning, Brian.
And let's start with subway safety and the recent deployment of more police and the National Guard. And listeners, here's a very specific question that Liz herself asked the mayor.
And I also hear a lot from New Yorkers when they talk about taking the trains.
Uh-huh.
We're seeing the police officers on the platforms, mm-hmm. but not so much riding the trains.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reason for that? And is there a way to incentivize them to ride? Because I think that a lot of New Yorkers say that that might actually give them the biggest reassurance, because sometimes the things that make them nervous are things that are happening on the train while they're riding, while they're sort of stuck there.
And Liz, I don't know if you got that question from our listeners, but we've been doing a number of segments on subway safety recently and these deployments of police and National Guard and bag searches. And that question always comes up. What are they doing on the platforms? Why aren't they on the trains? Here's the mayor's response.
Patrolling the complex underground of the subway system is a science. And your ability to respond when incidents happen and when you want police officers on the train and off the train, when you want them at platforms, at strategic location, there's a real science to it. Because if you have a police officer on the train during a rush hour, a packed train during a rush hour, that becomes extremely challenging to have that officer being able to walk up and down the train. During what's called AP hours, 8 p.m. to 4 a.m., less people on, you want those officers on the train, moving through the train, giving that visible omnipresence. So what Chief Kemper does is with Chief LePetri, they do an analysis, where are our crimes taking place, and at what time are they taking place? And based on that, they could deploy officers at the right place, at the right time, and the right type of assignment.
So, Liz, there were many words in that answer, and obviously he was speaking about a manager, speaking as a manager of a complex system, policing in general, policing in the subway system. So what did you take away from it?
Well, the first thing I'd point out, Brian, is the mayor really seems to relish these kinds of questions, specifically questions not just on public safety, but about public safety on the subway, because as a former transit police officer, this is very much in his wheelhouse. So yes, he gave a very detailed answer. What I think, and I think maybe your listeners might feel the same way, is the answer still left me a little puzzled, because yes, he makes a very good point. You don't want police officers to be stuck on trains. You know, commuters don't want to be stuck on trains. But if the police are not riding the trains during rush hour, how are they achieving this so-called feeling of omnipresence that the mayor wants? Like he says, it's a science. He's saying that it is a science, and they are looking at the data and trying to see where are the crimes taking place. So, you know, that's one thing. I'm interested in hearing, you know, how you and listeners feel about that. That was the explanation, is that, you know, we're not seeing the officers on the train as much because they're not riding the trains at the peak times that the other New Yorker writers are.
So, listeners, you hear the question from Liz, and we talked about this on yesterday's show too, but feel free to continue. Do you want more police officers on the actual trains and including at rush hour? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We know a uniform makes some people more comfortable, makes some people feel more threatened. So how about for you? And the mayor did refer specifically to that horrible incident that had people so scared and in which somebody did get shot.
Which happened during rush hour, I would point out. Yeah.
Yes, I was just going to say that too. During rush hour on an A train in Brooklyn. So here's the mayor on that.
I hated seeing that shooting where people were afraid and had to duck. And I could only imagine the next day that people picking up the paper and reading that that happens. You know, that damages everything that we have done. But we have a safe system. We have a safe city. We're the safest big city in America. And I'm not going to allow high-profile incidents to hijack the success of the men and women who have put themselves on the line every day.
Why'd you pull that clip? What was interesting to you about that? He obviously wants the perception not to overtake the reality, it seems to me. He's defending the police officers. He says the men and women who put their lives on the line every day. So where was he going with that as you heard it?
Well, you know, last week we were talking about the role perception is playing in the mayor's and the governor's strategy toward public safety on the subways. And yesterday, you know, the mayor really actually tried to rely a lot on data. Now, prior, at the start of the press conference, he put up a chart that measured homicides in major cities. And it turns out that New York City has the lowest homicides per capita. And he's using that to say what, you know, mayors before him have said, which is New York City is the safest big city in America. But then again, we had this very high profile shooting. The altercation was captured on video. So on video, you see both the altercation, not only the altercation, but you also see and you can hear the response of other riders. And it's very jarring. It's very disturbing. You hear people say, you know, oh, my God. You know, at one point, there's a woman who you can hear saying, where is the police? So that's sort of what the mayor is up against. But you hear his frustration there, right? I hated seeing that. And he doesn't want a moment like that to hijack what he feels is the day-to-day reality, which the data backs up. You know, he says 6 felonies a day, 4 out of 4 million riders a day.
Listener text, great question. I don't feel as endangered on subway platforms because I have more space to move. Inside the train, I am a captive audience. Nicole in Brooklyn might feel differently. Nicole, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Thanks. So I'm a lifelong New Yorker. I'm, you know, in my 50s, so I've been here a long time. And I ride the subway. I probably take 5 to 10 subways a day, almost 5 to 6 days a week. And I'm not a big fan of this mayor for a lot of other reasons, but I do think there's an exaggerated narrative going around about the subways and how dangerous they are. I see more cops on the subway platforms checking inside cars than I've ever seen in my entire life here. And the city is, you know, relatively safe. I mean, I grew up here in the 70s and 80s. I don't think it's comparable. So I'm wondering if, like, where this narrative is coming from, because I personally do not, I don't feel unsafe as a small female traveling all over the place. I cannot say that I feel unsafe. And that's not to say there's not other problems with the mayor, but I'm not understanding. And that's not to say there's no crime, but I just don't understand, like, where this obsession with this is coming from.
Nicole, thank you very much. Here's a text message that says, my morning train paused in a station for an extended period this morning, quote, to be checked by police. I guess that was the announcement. I assume this is part of the new policies, and it annoyed the heck out of me to be delayed, especially when they'd already announced we had an officer available on the train. And I think Steve in Manhattan might have a serious, a similar story to that texter. Hi, Steve, you're on WNYC.
Hi, yeah. I was riding the train yesterday afternoon, and there was an announcement made. No, I just heard the last text you played, so I guess this isn't unusual. First time I ever heard it. If you have need of assistance or you want to speak to a police officer, there is a police officer available here at this station. So step forward, step out of the car, and let us know if you need attention. Now, I got off the train because I thought it meant that there was a problem on the train and it was going to be stuck there forever. It was just like a public service announcement. I'd never heard it before.
General public service announcement. Steve, thank you. And so something's new in that respect. And Liz, I think I mentioned when you were on last week that I was on an A train recently and heard an announcement that said there is a police officer on board and will be patrolling this train. So I was kind of surprised after hearing that on an A train that the mayor's response to your question wasn't more like, we're doing that.
Right. That's very interesting. You know, to Stephen's remark, that PA announcement has been playing for some time. I mean, maybe it was phrased differently, you know, when he heard it yesterday. But I've, you know, I ride the trains almost every day, and I've been hearing that for, I feel, several months where you will hear the conductor say, you know, as we're riding into Union Square, you know, if you need or Union Square and also Times Square, you know, if you need assistance, there are police officers at this station. I also wanted to address Nicole's remarks about, you know, she's this longtime New Yorker and it and the level of crime doesn't compare to what it was in the 1980s. That's true. But I think we should keep in mind that there are a lot of new New Yorkers who haven't lived in New York City all their lives or even since the 1980s. What they're probably remembering is pre-pandemic. They're thinking about 2019 when crime was at historic lows. So that is sort of the perspective here. It's what is it relative to?
All right. We could talk about this all day, as
yes.
evidenced by our caller board and the way text messages are streaming in. We had so many calls and texts on this when this was our topic for about 45 minutes at the beginning of yesterday's show. But this is only one of the things that we want to talk about with respect to yesterday's news conference by Mayor Adams. When we continue in a minute with WNYC's Elizabeth Kim, we'll see how they addressed the sexual assault lawsuit that's now been filed against the mayor. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with our reporter Elizabeth Kim, who covers the mayor's weekly Tuesday news conferences. I said we were going to go on to things other than deployment of police officers on trains, but it looks like we have an officer calling in with a reason that they're not deployed more within the train cars themselves. So let's hear what he has to say. Daryl in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. We appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, Brian. I've called you in once before on these kind of issues. So one of the reasons that the officers are not always deployed on trains is because, you know, the train crosses multiple precincts, jurisdictions in the course of its travels. Those officers aren't always assigned. These officers are being taken from local commands or local transit districts in order to be placed on those platforms. So let's say you have a condition that's going on in Brooklyn, that officer, you know, if he effects an arrest or he takes some kind of criminal action, he's pretty much kind of tied to that particular zone that he's assigned to.
Oh, that's interesting.
So,
well, you know, we had another officer, I think a retired officer, calling in recently and said, bring back the transit police as a discrete force. And I think in part, exactly so that this doesn't become a problem. If you're assigned to the 77th precinct in Brooklyn or the 34th precinct in Upper Manhattan and the train's right. going everywhere, you're out of your precinct. Well, that's a bureaucratic distinction, not
right.
a public safety
and,
one, right?
Well, it becomes a manpower issue just because now you're, you know, on the short term, you're losing that officer. You know, if he's on a train, you're losing that officer his coverage for that particular zone or for that particular area when something does happen.
Right.
Often, you know, to the mayor's credit, he says, you know, when you have these officers on platforms, they are there to address specific conditions. And to be on a train, he's not there to address that specific condition that's in that particular place. He's now becomes moved to a place where maybe that condition doesn't need to be addressed at all. Maybe
a rolling place where nothing is necessarily happening. Daryl, thank you. Keep calling us. I appreciate your input. Liz, anything briefly on that?
I think that was very helpful. One thing I wondered why the officers couldn't just ride one stop and then walk to the other side of the platform and then get on a train going the other way and sort of keep doing that. I understand they need to stay within their precinct or zone, but I guess one question is, why not take a very, very short ride and then just maybe keep doing it several times? Again, to show the riders that you're present inside the trains.
All right, let's go on to that next big topic, the sexual assault lawsuit filed against the mayor just recently for an alleged incident from the 90s when he was a police officer. This is being brought now because of the temporary so-called look-back window that suspended the statute of limitations for such allegations that the state had opened recently. So what's the claim and what's the mayor's defense?
So the claim was initially filed in November, but there were not a lot of details. It was just a summons, and the person filing it wasn't required to provide those details. They probably wanted just to get the lawsuit in before the end of the deadline. What happened on Monday was the person did file a much more detailed complaint. And, you know, the mayor was asked about it at his press conference. Essentially, just to give you a summary, the accuser was someone who worked as an administrative aide in the Transit Police Bureau, working there around the same time as Adams. She says that she had been passed over for a promotion. And she also claims that Adams offered to help her, but in exchange demanded oral sex. She says that when she refused, he forced her to touch his genitals. So that is the essence of the complaint. The mayor was asked about it yesterday, and just like he did in November, he adamantly denied that this ever happened, and he said that he does not recall ever meeting this person.
Go ahead. Did you want to go further on that?
No, I was going to say that, you know, during the it was interesting because during the press conference, a lot of the questions actually focused not on the details of the complaint itself, but how the mayor is choosing to represent himself. So the city's corporation council is defending the mayor in this case. And that essentially means that taxpayers are footing the mayor's legal bills on, you know, something that happened that, you know, preceded him becoming mayor, but also, you know, involves alleged personal conduct. And the mayor and the city's corporation counsel, Sylvia Hines Radix, who was there at the press conference, you know, fielded this question. I think it must have been at least three times. Is this right?
And here's one of her answers.
The corporation counsel gets has based on the law and the charter, the ability to evaluate and make the determinations, the same determination we make with other cases.
So does that mean that she determined that the mayor was being accused of committing a sexual assault in his official capacity as a police officer, as opposed to as a private citizen?
You know, she didn't go into detail, but she did say that the mayor, being a former transit police officer, is entitled to counsel here from the city. But then she was kind of pressed on it because a reporter pointed out that there is a city statute that says corporation counsel can only represent employees within the scope of their employment. And that's when she gives that answer that basically says, listen, this is my discretion and I elected, I decide that this is something that the city can defend the mayor on. You know, it does seem a little bit I think taxpayers might be uncomfortable with this, but you know, I reached out and I called John Caney. He heads Reinvent Albany. It's a good government group, and he gave me what I thought was sort of a reasonable answer. If you think about the alternative, what's the alternative here? If the mayor doesn't have the money to, hire a private attorney and spend a lot of time and money on this case, he would have to set up, you know, what's known as a legal defense fund. He'd have to spend time also raising money for that fund. And that takes the mayor and also New Yorkers into possibly troubling territory, because it opens up this situation where the mayor will be possibly inviting donors to give him something in exchange for something. So what John Caney told me, that he'd rather taxpayers just foot the bill for this. If you think about it, the cost relative to the size of, you know, an $100 billion budget, it's a very, very tiny fraction, but it's better than, you know, the risk, which is the risk to democracy.
Let's go on to another topic. This settlement between the city and the Legal Aid Society over the right to shelter law as it applies to recent asylum seekers. Here's 17 seconds of the mayor on that from the news conference yesterday.
The system was never built for people to come anywhere on the globe, stay here for as long as they want on taxpayers' dollars. We want to incentivize people like we've done over 60%. Over 60% of those who have come through our care are now self-sustaining.
So can you describe the settlement? And Liz, I know you've covered dissatisfaction with that settlement by some advocates for the homeless.
Yes. The settlement essentially codifies a practice that the city has been using since around last September. And that is restricting the initial stay for migrant adults to only 30 days. Now, up until now, migrant adults have been able to reapply. What this settlement does is it gives the city the right to deny those extensions unless there are, quote unquote, extenuating circumstances. So this is a significant rollback, because if you think about what is unique about New York City's right to shelter policy, it's that it was applied to everyone. You know, Massachusetts has a statewide right to shelter rule, but that applies only to families with children and pregnant women. There are some cities like D.C. that have a right to shelter rule, but it's only applies when the temperature is below, you know, a certain number. So that's essentially it erodes what made New York City's right to shelter so unique in the fact that it was sweeping. And the reason it's sweeping, because it's driven by this principle that people shouldn't be living out on the streets. No one, not a man, woman, or child should be sleeping out on the city's streets. It's bad for them, and it's also bad for New York City.
And Liz, I mean, the conundrum is there are so many people coming, and there are only so many shelter slots, and communities around the city are resistant to opening more shelters around the city. So that's an issue. The mayor points out certainly the financial pressure on the city to keep housing more and more and more and more people who are arriving indefinitely. But then on the other side, the mayor boasted at the news conference, we don't have people living on the street in New York City, and we will not have people living on the street in Eric Adams, New York. But if the policy is really changing, and some of these adults without children are turned away after 30 days in a shelter and they don't have anywhere to go, he said that's, you know, about 80% of them are finding other places to go, but that still leaves 20%, and that's thousands of people. What does he think is going to happen?
I mean, that's exactly right, Brian, and that is why there are advocates that are very critical of this deal, because they say that even when the city started imposing this 30-day shelter limit, and I will say there is a 60-day shelter limit for families, so this is being imposed across the board, but that advocates say that once the city started imposing that limit, they did see more people being forced to stay on the streets. And I think that there is anecdotal evidence of that as well. And now that this is now enshrined, and now that the barrier to reenter shelter is much higher, that is what critics of the deal say, that the city, you know, that that's what's going to happen as we head into the spring and there's expected to be a surge. And we will see this play out. I will say you're right, Brian. It is a conundrum. And, you know, one of the words that the deputy mayor, Ann Williams-Isom, uses, which I think is a good word, is that, you know, this is a crisis. It's a humanitarian crisis. It's an immigration issue. And because we have, you know, we have a limited amount of space, what do? We have to triage the situation. And I think that is an appropriate word, because if there's a limited amount of space, they have to decide who gets that space. And right, they are putting families and children at the top of that list.
Liz, last question for this week. I see that you were looking at the front page of the New York Post today, which is a picture, kind of a caricature of Mayor Adams, or a photo of his face inside a caricatured body, sitting in a room that's on fire, with the headline, the sarcastic headline, "This is fine." And this is based on a new survey, apparently, that finds just 30% of New Yorkers say the quality of life is good here. And, you know, I will look with some skepticism at a New York Post cover on something like this, but why did you flag it?
It's important because, for the most part, the Post has been generally friendly to the mayor. You know, it's been a friendly outlet. They're sort of aligned in terms of their priorities on public safety. But that was probably the harshest cover. And it's a cover. It's not a single story that I've seen them do on the mayor. And for people who are political reporters, it just makes you wonder whether the Post is beginning to turn on the mayor.
Elizabeth Kim, cover City Hall for WNYC and Gothamist. And since the mayor generally only takes reporters' questions about a variety of topics on Tuesdays, Liz generally comes on with us on Wednesdays with clips and her analysis and to take your calls. Liz, thanks for today.
Thanks, Brian.